Well, let's see. Where do we begin this afternoon? Well, let's start because you know a whole lot about the subject with your book on Orson Welles' last movie. And, of course, putting together the documentary, They'll Love Me When I'm Dead. Tell me a little bit about your dealings with Peter Bogdanovich.
So, yeah, you know, it was interesting. Peter was, I worked on that book for probably 4 years, and it took me about 2.5 to get Peter to actually agree to see me and talk to me. And he wasn't, it was funny because he was always like, yeah, I'd love to. And then you'd never hear back from him. which he's not the first person who's done that to me, you know, as an interview subject, but I was like, maybe I'll never get to talk to him. But it was, yeah, it was very interesting. I saw him initially at what must have, you know, what was not a great point for him. He was teaching at North Carolina College of the Arts down in Winston-Salem. And I went down to see him, and he was very gracious, and he was living in like a loft that the school must, you know, have rented for visiting professors. And it was kind of this neat loft, and he was everything, you know, you'd expect Peter Bogdanovich to be. He had the ascot going. he had the big tinted glasses. And he was really, you know, very, you know, the thing that struck me about him was that despite everything that had happened to him in Hollywood, which we'll get into, which was a lot, you know, there was like almost this innocence about him. You know, he just like, he talked about Orson Welles like he had just seen Orson the week before. You could tell, you know, how much his relationship with Welles had meant to him. You know, he's a very sweet guy and very like, you know, Hollywood does not churn out. When you may come in innocent, but you don't get churned out too innocent.
Right.
And Peter just had this kind of weird innocence and love of film about him that I found really incredible. And then, you know, he was very helpful. You know, his relationship with Welles was extremely complicated. And Welles kind of turned on Peter, somewhere in the late 70s, and they were somewhat estranged from each other until about 84, like the year before Orson died. But Peter was, you know, he just, I don't know, you know, he was really, you know, he was for real. He was exactly what, when you see him, you know, being interviewed, and he's, you know, always wearing the ascot and always, you know, kind of decked out as Peter Bogdanovich. He was that even though he was down there in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, teaching, you know, art students. So, but he was terrific. He was a terrific source, and he was very, very insightful about Welles and about films in general.
Well, yeah, I mean, you talked to him a whole lot more than we did, but I remember reaching out just on a whim, and weeks went by. I didn't hear anything, and then out of the blue, I get this email. Understand you'd like to talk with Peter. Would tonight work? I'm like, yes, right. Yes, it would. Absolutely. And I thought, okay, this is great. I wonder what it will be like. My gosh, the man could not have been kinder and more generous. We talked to him for, geez, I think about 40, 45 minutes, which is an eternity in radio. And I thought, we're a little station in Bangor, Maine. Peter Bogdanovich does not have to be talking with us at all, and certainly doesn't have to give us this much time and be as open and as giving as he was. I was so impressed with the man.
Yeah, he really was. He was really, there was this real, you know, a real earnestness about him that, again, you don't kind of see, you know, you might see somebody who's really earnest going into Hollywood. You don't see somebody come out all that earnest. But he is very earnest, very, you know, just, yeah, very giving, very generous with his time. You know, he didn't mind me, you know, you know, poking around at, you know, with some stuff that was not super comfortable for him. He directed me to his archives of his correspondence at University of Indiana. And in there I found it was fascinating because I had no idea that existed. And I'd been to Michigan where Orson Welles' correspondence was being archived. And I got to see the other side of some of the correspondence I had seen in Michigan, you know? And so, and it was just, which was just wild because it's like you were seeing, you know, you're getting one side of the conversation in Michigan and getting the other side of it in Bloomington, Indiana. And, you know, one of the things I recall very well was him telling me about how he had been watching The Tonight Show at a time, I think, shortly after Welles had run out on living with him, which was a completely one of the all-time craziest episodes in the history of, you know, certainly Orson Welles and Peter Bogdanovich's life.
Including Welles nearly burning down the house, right?
Right. And yeah, well, I mean, he was like the man who came to dinner, you know, except he stayed for more than a couple weeks or whatever. Yeah, he almost burned down the house, and he also ate all the fudgesicles and accused Sybil Shepherd of eating them, which is my absolute favorite thing. Is he went on a tirade running through the house saying, "Who ate all the fudgesicles?" And he was like, "Sybil!" You know, and it was very clear that Orson had eaten all the fudgesicles, as one might expect. But Peter, he had watched The Tonight Show, and Orson was hosting, I believe. Either Orson was hosting or Burt Reynolds was hosting. And they started talking about Peter and just were kind of viciously making fun of him. Mm. And Peter sent, I think he sent a letter to Orson saying, you know, "I guess I know, I've been wondering what you think about me, now I know." And Orson sent him back two letters. And he said, you know, "Pick whichever one you want." And one of them was a lengthy, abject apology about how bad a friend he'd been and how it was inexcusable, you know, and that he betrayed Peter's trust. Then the other one just said, "You deserved it."
Wow.
Yeah, and he said, "Pick whichever one you like."
Well, it's striking too. There are some certain similarities there. Both of them were boy wonders, great success early on, and then Hollywood seemed to turn their back on both of them along the way. And I'm sure that wasn't lost on Peter.
No, you know, it's funny. You know, there was a great quote from Peter at one point where he said something like, "Orson was never as successful as I was, and I was never as good as Orson was." And I think that, you know, that's true. And, you know, Peter is like his life, you know, is like, it's one of those stories that, you know, I mean, you know, it's so hackneyed to say it, but I mean, you couldn't make it up. I mean, here's the guy who grew up obsessed with movies, kind of, you know, pushed his way into, you know, writing about movies, wound up writing about movies for Esquire, used that opportunity to meet all of his heroes, you know, to meet John Ford, to meet John Wayne, to meet Howard Hawks, to meet all these people, and he lived on movies. I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, he's like literally all he did, you know, his whole life was about movies. And then, you know, wound up getting to make movies, which I think everybody who writes about movies, whether they admit it or not, secretly would love to make movies. And, you know, makes this, you know, kind of takes a job with Roger Corman, you know, gets to do more and more. The cheaper Roger Corman realizes it'll be to have Bogdanovich do more and more. And next thing you know, he makes 3 hit critically acclaimed movies in a row. You know, his first 3 real movies, you know, his first 3 studio movies out of the gate. And he falls in love with, you know, the beautiful blonde leading lady and, you know, leaves his wife. And it's just, you know, you could make that up. And then, of course, there's just this epic fall from grace after that. Very Icarus-like fall. You know, he kind of had it all. He had the big, beautiful house in Bel Air. He had Sybil Shepherd. He had all the success. And then everybody just couldn't wait for him to fail. And when he failed, they, you know, the whole town just piled on him.
We're talking with Josh Karp here on Downtown. Despite that, I still think some of his later movies were quite good. I thought St. Jack was a terrific movie with an amazing performance from Ben Gazzara.
Yes. If I may digress, I recently rewatched Roadhouse. And Ben Gazzara's performance in Roadhouse is the most underestimated aspect of Roadhouse.
Right.
He is fantastic as the bad guy. Just total scenery chewing, you know, just unbelievable. But yeah, Ben Gazzara is great in St. Jack. St. Jack is, you know, I think initially they had wanted like Nicholson or Warren Beatty to play that part. And Peter really wanted to do it with Ben Gazzara, who was a terrific, terrific actor. But yeah, St. Jack is a terrific movie. Mask, obviously, is a terrific movie.
He had a great line when we talked to him about Mask, and he couldn't stand working with Cher, and he said, you know, I had a lot of close-ups on her eyes because she had such soulful eyes, but as time went on, I realized it was really just self-pity.
Yeah, I heard an interview with him replayed the other day where he talked about Cher, and he said, what nobody will tell you is that Cher hates all men. Yeah, and he said similar stuff about the close-ups. He said, you know, everybody said, but God, she was great in Mask. He said, that's because I shot all close-ups. She's great in close-ups.
He also told us, I found this fascinating, that he loved working with John Ritter, and he really wanted John Ritter for the part that Timothy Bottoms got in Last Picture Show.
Right. That is true. John Ritter was in, I think, was it They All Laughed?
Right.
You know, the movie Peter made with Ben Gazzara and Audrey Hepburn and Dorothy Stratton. He loved John Ritter. And I think thought, you know, I think saw a talent in John Ritter that, you know, probably a lot of people didn't get to see, you know, in him as a performer because he got so pigeonholed doing, you know, the kind of stuff he became famous for. But he loved John Ritter. And he was, you know, he's such a, I mean, he's very, you know, smart director, very sure of himself, probably to the point of his own self-destruction, I think, in a couple of cases. But, you know, my wife and I watched What's Up, Doc? The night he died. Mm. You know, he had been offered the opportunity to make The Getaway with Steve McQueen, and as I recall, he was like, no, I don't want to do that. You know, and Streisand wanted to do a movie with him, and she wanted to do this movie called The Glimpse of Tiger, which became an Elliot Gould movie that never got finished. And she wanted to do that, and he said, no, I want to do a screwball comedy with you. And, you know, I mean, and that movie is just so, you know, it's so far from The Last Picture Show, and it's so great.
Yeah,
I mean, it's still so funny, you know, to watch to watch today. Just Kenneth Mars is enough to make that movie worth watching. That's one thing I realized. Anytime Kenneth Mars shows up in a movie, you know it's at least worth having watched.
Oh, absolutely. How important was it to him to help get Other Side of the Wind finally finished?
Very important. He was really, he was really dedicated to Orson. I think throughout and after Orson died, he really took the responsibility of trying to get Other Side of the Wind finished very seriously, and he worked on it for, years and years and years, and he and Frank Marshall, Joe McBride also, really put a lot into it. I mean, the one thing I always think about, this is not really about Peter, but it's, all these people who wanted to see the movie finished, they go, why doesn't Frank Marshall just pay for it? They're like, oh, he's got plenty of money. And I just remember thinking, like, that's the reason Frank Marshall has plenty of money.
Right.
he's not doing things like, if you can't find funding to finish The Other Side of the Wind, then just putting your own money into it isn't necessarily the answer. But Peter really worked hard at it and was instrumental in, and ultimately helping guide the completion of the film. Which, think about, how many years that went on for. It's unbelievable. You're talking, almost 50 years. And for my money, he has one of the two really great performances in that film.
Oh, yeah.
He's terrific playing himself, doing it in a way that really, I think, showed a different side of him, showed that kind of innocent side of him that really loved Orson Welles and really loved movies.
Now, for my money, I'm curious to hear what you'll say. For my money, the other great performance is John Huston, basically as Orson Welles.
Right. Absolutely. That is the other great performance. I mean, the two of them, what's interesting is, they're both guys with such clearly defined personas. Peter is, kind of this great showbizzy, guy, and Huston is this, larger than life figure, and he gets them to do that, and then there's just this little slice of each of them that's under that surface that's vulnerable. And which, I don't know about, how much Peter's vulnerability was visible, but John Huston certainly was not in most of his life. And Orson got both of them to be in just vulnerable in little glimpses. And I think those are the things that really carry the movie. I think those are the things I like most about the movie are their two performances.
I want to change subject for just a moment and talk a little bit about Bob Saget, who passed away, of course, last weekend at the age of 65. I was not a Full House fan, but I always respected his work, loved his stand-up. But I think what I've been most impacted by over the last several days is the incredible outpouring of love for him. And, boy, it sure seemed like he was about as nice a guy as there was in the entertainment business.
Yeah, I also was not a Full House fan. I'd always heard that he was in doing stand-up extremely blue, and completely opposite his Full House character. He was great in The Aristocrats, telling that joke, and he was. Yeah, it's unbelievable. He really, I was doing an interview the other day and somebody and I, we were talking about Paul Mazursky. And I had said what a great interview he had been. And it's interesting, how, Bob Saget died, fairly young. So that's notable. But, you know, it's interesting, you know, because the outpourings over both Peter and Bob Saget, you know, as compared to Paul Mazursky, who was just kind of like, yeah, Paul Mazursky died, that guy was a good filmmaker. You know, but there was this real connection, I think, people in the comedy world had to Saget. Mm. I mean, I saw Jimmy Kimmel, like, you know, breaking down, talking about him. And,
right.
You know, and I'm not super privy to, you know, Bob Saget's personal life, but I do know that, you know, everybody I've ever spoken to who's spoken of him spoke of him very highly and as a very sweet, sweet guy.
Josh Karp, always great to have you on. Thanks so much, as always, for making a little time for us. Well, we'll do it again before too long, I'm sure.
It sounds good. Thank you so much for having me, Rich.